You hear what he says? You fellas hear what Eddie says? The bravest man he ever struck was a Yank. You hear that?
And I'm sticking to it. Cripes, I didn't think you'd forgive him. You of all people. He was the bravest man I ever struck. An American, he was. An American engineer named Van Noy. The bravest soldier I ever met.
Citation. Presenting authentic stories of heroism and gallantry taken from the histories of war. The story of Private Nathan Van Noy of the United States 2nd Engineer Special Brigade.
It was on Scarlet Beach in October 1943. Scarlet Beach near Finchhaven in New Guinea. We'd just beaten the Japs to a landing, and there was plenty of trouble brewing. A real stinker coming up.
The 20th Japanese Division was already on its way to Finchhaven when the 20th Australian Brigade, one-third its size, landed ahead of it and secured a foothold on the east coast of the Huon Peninsula. Bold planning, determined fighting, skillful generalship, and luck had combined to give the Australians at Finchhaven a good chance of weathering the storm, which they now knew was gathering at Saddleburg. The Japanese General Adachi ordered the Japanese forces on land, sea, and air to retake Scarlet Beach.
Jet bombers sure dropped the swag that time. Very considerate of the rains falling to come and help us put the fires out.
Fires? No signs of those Jet signal fires up on the hills yet?
Nothing. Pitch black up there. Anyway, you wouldn't see them in this rain. That air raid was signaled enough anyway. Clear enough signal for me.
I thought that Jet operational order that the fellas found up there on the hills might have been a plant.
Could have been. But you know the Japs. Your officers seem to carry top-secret documents with them when they go into the front line.
That's true. And if the operational order was carried out, well, we can expect air attacks.
And attacks from those Japs up in the hills. But the one thing that's got me worried is the assault Tojo's going to put in from the sea.
Look here, mate, you don't have to worry. They pay General Wharton to do the worrying in this area. All you've got to do is fight. And you can get back to your position. I can hear Tojo coming back again.
For 2 hours in the rain-soaked darkness on October 17, Japanese bombers rained bombs onto the Australian defensive positions on Scarlet Beach. Then, from a coast-watching station along the coast, came the report that Japanese barges loaded with troops were heading towards the important Allied beachhead. In the darkness, the alerted Australians crouched over their weapons, straining their ears.
You hear that, Eddie?
I can hear something.
Shh. It's one of our spotter aircraft. I can tell the sound.
I thought for a moment it might be those Jap barges they reckon are headed for us.
Relax, Ridge. The Japs won't surprise us.
The Japanese had other ideas. They planned to surprise the Australians, so for 20 days a special attack force trained for the assault. Then they were ready. And, as General Adachi later described them, they awaited the day. firm in their belief of certain victory. Came the day, and they set off in their barges ready to do or die. Many of them died earlier than they anticipated when the fleet of barges was mauled by a force of Allied torpedo boats that intercepted and sank three of the craft. But the surviving boats with muffled motors pressed on through the darkness towards Scarlet Beach.
The spotted aircraft is gone. There's no sign of the traffic.
Listen! Listen!
Barges! Take post, enemy barges!
I heard them. Listen. They're coming.
Sure they're coming. Do you know the orders? Hold fire until they're within 50 yards of the beach. And these Japs are going to get a shock.
So the defenders on Scarlet Beach prepared to meet the enemy. There were two companies of the 2nd 28th Battalion dug in along the beach. They set up two-pounder anti-tank guns and sighted machine guns with fields of fire over the sea. A Bofors gun of the 10th Light Anti-Aircraft Battery was lowered for horizontal fire. Among the Australians was a small detachment of United States engineers who had been setting up beach installations. When the alarm sounded, the Americans manned two 37mm guns and two Browning .50 caliber machine guns. One of the American engineers crouched behind the sights of a Browning machine gun was Private Nathan Van Noy, Jr.
They're heading up to the north end of the beach.
Yeah, moving in quickly, too.
They're turning now. They're turning.
Yes, turning into the beach.
Hold it. 50 yards.
And 50 yards it is.
The Bofors gun opened the firing, but the commander saw that his shots were going high, flying over the barges that appeared as a white wake just out there in the darkness. With the Bofors useless, the crew leapt into weapon pits, and as the barges crunched into the beach, a wall of fire from Australian and American machine guns swept to meet them.
Listen, the Japanese bugler standing off in the middle of his firing.
Yeah, I can see him. See him jumping ashore? A couple of Japs with flamethrowers with him. See him? Up along the flank there.
Oh, I see him now. Jumping ashore from that third barge.
Now, that's where the Yank engineers have a couple of machine guns planted.
That's right. Got a Browning camouflage just about there.
Never mind about the Yanks. Look at this bunch heading for us.
With bugles sounding, the Japanese plunged ashore, and there was pandemonium on Scarlet Beach. Every defender was occupied. And behind his camouflage Browning machine gun, Private Van Noy lay coolly waiting with his loader, United States Corporal Stephen Popa, waiting to feed the ammunition. They lay hidden as the Japanese came ashore, and one barge came right at their position. Other guns were firing, but Van Noy was waiting until the charging Japanese were almost upon him. Closer came the enemy, throwing grenades as they charged.
They're still coming. Jumping and bunch to the right, heading for the Yank. They hit the Yank. Plunged a grenade right under that Yank machine gun. Right on it. The Yank's firing. He's firing.
That Japanese grenade had landed in Van Noy's gun emplacement, shattering one of Van Noy's legs so that it hung useless. His companion, Popa, was wounded by the same explosion. But the two men stayed behind their machine gun, and Van Noy pressed the trigger, sweeping across the enemy and cutting them down as they charged.
He just pinned them down on the beach.
And now it's our turn with the grenades.
Give it on! Top this, young Harry!
Browning, manned by Van Noy, caused great slaughter and pinned down the enemy. The barges were pounded. Two were destroyed on the beach while the third drifted away filled with groaning wounded. And Van Noy continued to fire on the enemy, tracing them as they crawled on the beach. Another grenade burst in his gun pit, but he fought on. Both his legs were now badly shattered, and he was bleeding heavily, but he fought on. Then another enemy grenade landed in the pit, and the gun was silenced. With his finger on the trigger, the gallant American youth lay dead. His companion, Stephen Popa, also badly wounded, managed to grab a rifle and fire a bullet into the head of a charging Japanese coming at him with a bayonet. When found, he was alive, with the body of the dead Japanese sprawled across him.
Yeah, I'll pay that, Yank. He had some guts.
Like I said, the bravest man. The bravest soldier I ever saw was that young Van Noy. They gave him America's highest decoration, the Congressional Medal of Honor. He was the first American engineer to win that award. And they did something else that would have pleased him, too. A year later, when the American Army developed a new type of port repair ship, a seagoing vessel of 2,500 tons, the first they launched was christened Junior Van Noy.
Citation. These stories are authentic. The program was produced by Donald Crosby at AWA for Army Public Relations.